Hi, Carol joined. Who's on?
It's Ken's here.
Hey, Ken. Welcome.
How are you doing?
Okay.
And Rick Weissner here, too.
Hey, Rick. Sounds like somebody's on the road.
That's me. I'm walking to my truck. I'm just finishing up. It's been one of those busier than normal days, so I will be in the truck and on a headphone here in a little bit.
Yeah.
And now it'll be a lot quieter.
Who joined?
That's Ann.
Hey.
Hello.
Is that Ann Ayala?
Uh-huh.
Fantastic. I have a big favor to request. Could you be the moderator and rejoin as the moderator?
Are you going to me?
Yeah.
Could I be the moderator?
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
Those diplomatic skills.
Are you disappearing?
Well, I may well disappear. We'll leave the call up, but if you actually can be on, that would be great. I just got a 4 a.m. pickup tomorrow morning to go to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd like to get to bed, and so would I.
I can understand that.
But we'll leave the
Is anybody
call.
Else on besides?
Rick Weissner is on, and Ken.
And Ken.
And possibly others, but I've been chatting. And Ken, the general way these calls work is there's a bit of presentation and people ask questions as they occur, in effect.
Okay.
And they're generally very, very free form.
Sure.
And you have this package of slides, and there's a part of me that says, how can you talk about the slides when you don't have them in front of you?
Oh, from my end of it?
Yeah.
Oh, I know the slides intimately, as I've looked at them and put them together about 5 billion times, so I also can pull up a computer here in the truck. That's not a problem.
So you're on the road.
We are in the digital age, so that's not a big issue.
That's true.
Actually,
that's
I'm going to do that right
one
now.
Place at Biltmore in 2008, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to do this than it ever used to be. So
it's amazing.
Can do that. Yeah. While we're waiting for everyone else to join, I mean, you tell me what our time frame is, but while we're waiting for everyone else to join, I'm going to go ahead and have it sitting here, so it's not a big problem.
Yeah, I would not necessarily wait for others to join because I don't always hear the beeps and people don't always announce themselves.
All right, so if you want to start out now, that's fine. We've got Ann and who else am I on with? Okay, all right. Well, I'll just go ahead and start, and then as people come in and we get questions, we can certainly go ahead. I should have driven to your house. If it's only one or two people, I'd come visit you.
That would be. Except Rick and I don't live very close together.
No problem. I'm in the truck now, and it's a lot quieter, and I've got an earpiece in. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
All right.
I can.
Well, let me give you some background on why this became an issue and sort of how it all started and what we know. That's kind of where we start out with this, is what do we know, and then what can we potentially find out. What we started with is the fact that I was perusing a bunch of information and came up with a paper from the University of Arizona where they'd essentially looked at what was known about urine color in people. And this was University of Arizona study using the I believe it was a veterans hospital there, and they had published a fairly intense study looking at urine color in people, and they had identified something like 70 different colors of urine and tried to correlate it in terms of physical conditions. And I got looking at that, and I thought, well, geez, you know, that's amazing, and who in the right mind would go ahead and do a study like that? But
you got a lot of samples.
Yeah, but they did. They have a ready population there, and they had a couple of people from the urology service that looked at this, and they were looking at, you know, all the drug interactions that can cause changes in color, and then looking at systemic diseases, various types of cancer, and followed a lot of different things. And it was really pretty amazing as far as what they knew and what they could surmise basically from urine color. And I got to think, well, geez, I wonder what's been done in horses. And that's where it all started. And I did a literature search and found out that really nothing has been done in horses. And people have watched horses urinate for years and years and years, but nobody had ever done a similar study. So the first part of this that was basically 2 years ago was a study to go ahead and start just collecting some urine and taking a look at what variations we had. What I learned is, and anybody that's ever gone to the paint store, and if you want to match a particular color paint to something in your house, a chair, a piece of fabric, whatever, you can take the fabric in there now and go into your local Home Depot and put it in the machine that goes ahead and has an optic scanner and reader, and it'll tell you what all the components of that are. So the fact that, you know, most urine is yellow, well, that is true and not true. It is any one of, you know, 30 different shades of yellow. And that's what it's gotten down to, is being that specific in terms of looking at all this stuff. Now, the next question is, what does it mean? And that was the second part of the study. You know, all right, so we recorded all this urine, and then we tried to correlate it to specific stages of endurance rides and so forth, and where these horses were. And then the next step was to go ahead and then maybe even correlate that to other specific deals in terms of pathology. And that's really what we're looking for. My ultimate goal on some of this stuff was to try to figure out if we could come up with a predictive indicator, and that being something that we could look at a very stage during a ride with a non-invasive marker to decide which horses were having problems and which weren't. And again, if I topped it out and I asked you which two major diseases would we be looking for that we could have some sort of telltale sign in the urine, the first one that should come to everybody's mind is basically what?
Tying up, basically.
Yeah. And then you have an idea on the second part of that. What else would you be looking for? And there's a lot of research in terms of how much actual bleeding goes on
blood?
In the bladder.
Yeah, I was going to say bleeding or blood would be
right.
The
two colors we're looking for is essentially variations of brown and variations of red. Those would be the two things that we're most worried about. Everybody also knows about horses that are essentially more dehydrated or less dehydrated, and how much urine color can change because of that. And I was really interested to see that. Can I tell a horse that's doing well hydration-wise, or a horse that's basically having difficulty with hydration, and being able to look at that? So specific gravity and some of the other things that we can test on urine were next in my line to go ahead and look at it. And you know, these urine test strips, if you've ever seen them, there's a picture on one of the slides there that shows this nice long piece of plastic, essentially, with all these little squares on it.
Yeah.
Essentially, a dipstick urine test. Yeah, they're pennies a piece, and you can go ahead and dip it in the urine, and within 30 to 45 seconds, you get a wealth of information, everything from bilirubin to ketones to protein. And I wanted to see, okay, let's go out there, collect some urines, watch how these horses do throughout the course of a ride, and then look at and apply these sticks and figure out, okay, what did it tell us about how these horses are actually doing? And that's exactly what we did. We went ahead and went out there and collected them. And I'll have to say, people are saying we're at least a little cautious initially. How are you going to get all this urine? Pretty darn easy. Michael Beasley designed what we dubbed the Beasley bucket, and essentially tank them with a piece of wood. Take a plastic bottled water container and cut it in half, and take the cap off the bottom part, or the top part, I guess, that's got the cap on it, put a nail through that cap, and essentially invert the bottom piece into the middle of that, and you now have a little handheld thing that you can catch urine from, and you can make these and literally replace the bottom with a clean piece from another water container ad infinitum. And at every ride, if you look in a garbage can, you've got 15 or 16 easily anytime you want to look in there.
Water bottles.
Exactly. So that's essentially how we did it. And is it exactly perfect because maybe there's a little extra water in that bottle? Great. We tried to shake them out. We tried to dry them out. We think we got pretty clean catches, at least in terms of looking at bacterial content. We didn't have a whole lot of bacteria in there, so it's got to be fairly clean. And that gives you a reasonable look. You've got a clear piece of plastic. We could photograph these, take a look at the color, and then run our dipsticks on them. And that's essentially what the mechanics of the setup is. As far as what we came up with, it's been pretty interesting. The slides that I put in that little slide set were really interesting in the sense that the horse that's having a problem, that's got the really dark-colored urine, well, let's go to the slide that's got the multiple multiple little urine samples that with times next to, and that is an actual case of a horse that tied up at the first loop at Big South Fork at the weight check on the second day, and that horse was classic signs of tie up, tight gluteal muscles, sweating, almost a little colicky. We went ahead and put him on fluids, and you can see the colors change from the really brown, coffee-colored myoglobin in a very short period of time. If you look at the times on those sequences and the amount of fluid that that horse had, the amazing thing is that horse urinated as much as it did. In every 10 minutes, he was giving us a whole boatload of urine, but we were pumping that fluid to him. We got it really early. You can see it go from the myoglobin color, that dark brown, coffee-colored stuff. As it starts to clear, it becomes more of a plum color, and then it becomes more of a strict hemoglobin or the red tinge to it, getting rid of that brown color. And that's a horse I think that showed, it was interesting because it showed both ends. It showed a tie-up myoglobin, and then it showed bladder bleeding hemoglobin. There are statistics that say that over 90% of serious runners have blood in their urine. The vast majority of them, almost 85%, will have non-visible blood, but if you test it, you will find blood in the urine. And there shouldn't be any in there.
This is people. This is people, runners.
Human runners, correct.
Right, okay.
Theory being that most of that blood is from concussion or irritation of red blood cells. There's studies that Dr. Schott did on the treadmill that showed that we've got very similar percentages in horses. His feeling, however, was that the majority of the blood was coming from bladder trauma because of the waveform motion and how much motion the bladder does when the horse runs. And if you think about it, horses were not designed to run for very long. Their fight-or-flight response to get away from predators is a burst of speed over a short period of time. That is the way the horse evolved. And that bladder can tolerate that motion. When you go ahead and you set up a long-term trotter, a long-term canter, and maintain that for long periods of time, that bladder starts going back and forth, and you get a nice little waveform motion that torques on the bladder and pulls the bladder a good bit. And even the urine sloshing inside that bladder wall creates what they feel is a fairly good amount of trauma inside that bladder. So over the course of a 50 or certainly 100-mile ride, getting some either visible blood or microscopic blood inside the bladder is not unusual for that kind of trauma. And that fits with marathon and ultra-marathon runners. The same thing, that's part of the reason that they propose this for gastric ulcers as well, too. If you've looked at the inside of the stomach, you've got a glandular part of the stomach and a non-glandular part. And the acid part of the stomach is supposed to stay down in the bottom of the glandular. If you think of it, imagine a round beaker with a top long flange on it, or a long top. Imagine a brandy sniffer. We've all seen brandy sniffers. And let's say we go ahead and coat the bottom of that brandy sniffer, the bottom half, with some kind of an epoxy paint that also is not able to or is protective and won't let the acid stuff get through it. So I put some acid in the bottom of that brandy sniffer, and as long as I keep it upright, I can swirl it around a little bit, that stuff stays in the lower part of the protected part of the glass. If I start rocking that brandy sniffer side to side, that acid goes up further and further on the side of the glass and gets away from my protective coating and starts getting onto the glass. Now, if that was the stomach, the squamous or non-protected part of the stomach that ends up sloshing that acid around is where don't normally get acid and you get more problems. And it's interesting that is where we see most of the ulcers are on the junction, but it's actually got a name, Margo placatus. We used to pencil her in for bringing potato salad and any of the vesicle functions. Margo always showed up. But it's called the Margo placatus, and it's that line that separates the glandular and non-glandular part of the stomach. That's where ulcers occur. So that whole idea about motion causing movement of fluid within a structure and causing damage is part of one of the postulates for gastric ulcers in athletic horses as well. And I think that probably is going to be pretty true about what we end up with the bladders as far as long-term bleeding the bladder.
Are there structures within the bladder then that are sort of similar to what you have in the stomach with the two different types of wine?
No, because we're not dealing with acid. There was never a reason to put anything in the bladder to protect
right.
one part versus the other. It is just that the volume of fluid and the motion of that fluid in the bladder and what it does to the bladder surface causes it to have more inflammation just by moving it back and forth and back and forth. So the analogy is not apt as far as acid and
in the structure of the bladder, structure of the stomach, but in terms of that motion, putting things in areas that they weren't supposed to be in, or creating a lot more trauma that the structure wasn't essentially designed for. And the longer result of this too is, what do we say about these horses? The interesting ones to me are not the horses that go out there and tie up and give you that brown urine. The really interesting ones are the ones that go out there and give you that brown urine while they're just cruising along. And we've got a couple of those slides in there with horses that at the national championships showed up at loop 2 or 3 with really brown, coffee-colored urine, and yet the horses' CRIs and heart rate parameters and they, you know, the ride times were fine. The horses were middle of the pack. They were hydrated. They were doing fine. As veterinarians, we see that stuff, and 90% or 99% of the veterinarians out there are going to pull you with formoglobin just because of what we usually feel that means. And I would say that in the vast majority of cases, they're probably right, but those horses, since we had a controlled environment, we decided to let them go based on what we've seen in this study, because there are a number of them out there. And all of those horses cleared by the next urination. So something shows up, discolors the urine like you would expect it to be, myoglobin, and gets cleared out of the urine by the next time. The horses go on, do fine. I followed up on those horses. They never had any problems when they went home.
Yeah.
So there's something else at work here, and we do not have a good handle on what it is that differentiates that coffee-colored urine in a horse in trouble from the same colored urine in a horse that has no problems.
Just from personal experience, I know a ride where Drubin peed rather dark at the first vet check, and I didn't, you know, that was very early in his career, and I didn't, you know enough to know.
We didn't know enough to panic.
Yeah.
Right. So you didn't panic and went on with him, and he was okay.
Well, he set a course record and did 110 hours.
And I don't know. I would like to know a little bit more. These are the questions I have. The horses that do that, is it more routinely early in the ride, later in the ride? How quickly do they clear? My impression is they clear fairly quickly with that, but I don't know that for a fact. And then where is it coming from? And in discussions with Dr. Hal Schott, we don't have answers to this. What we want to do is really identify more of these horses, start looking at the urine a little bit more closely, and perhaps even at other parameters in that horse more closely, to try to figure it out. Can what we find in these horses that compensate and tolerate this and do fine help us with the horses that don't? And is there a factor that do more horses have this than we know about? And is there a factor in horses that are successful that allows them to deal with some of those myoglobin breakdown pigments and go on, and other horses that can't, and it becomes a kind of a cascade of events that then leads to the full-blown tie-up? And I don't know. So that's one thing that we'd like to go on and look at, and it becomes really important to have riders out there helping us out identifying these horses. We will find the horses that have the poorly colored urine and tie-up. They will find us just because of what I said. Them and arrive. But those horses that urinate out on trail or urinate, you know, away from the vet check and have this typically bad colored urine and then go on and do fine, we don't hear about those horses. But those are unfortunately the ones that we're way more interested in this particular study, because they're going to give us a better answer as to why some horses tolerate that. And again, it's a first problem as well, because at the average ride, you know, call it to question somebody. You come walking back up to the vet check. Your horse is already vetted through you, just doing your whole time. You come up to the vet check with a bottle full of this stuff and saying, hey, I just wanted to turn this in to you guys, give you some information. This is what my horse did. We're going to go out on the trail. You're going to have some problems with a good number of rides. You won't have a problem with the ride where I'm working, but a lot of people that haven't quite bought into this different population of horses might say, hey, you're not going out. And that's unfortunate. But at the same token, I don't want to change the culture just yet because we don't have the answers. When I presented this stuff at the last AERC in Louisville, they did not want to present it to the general population because of what that might mean if somebody wanted to push the issue and say, hey, I heard Dr. Marcello's talking. My horse has got brown urine, but it's okay to go. We don't know enough to say that. I'd rather err on the side of caution just yet, but be aware that there are horses out there where this is not a catastrophic finding.
Yeah, I know one of my earlier rides, after the ones that I was talking about, but with my horse Strut, this is one of those that you actually sort of knew a cause.
Right.
Of course, it was like 23 degrees when we started in the morning, and someplace on that first loop, we were crossing a field, and there was a gopher hole or something that was covered over with frost, and he stepped in it and flipped.
Right.
And we parted company and eventually rejoined more or less immediately, and then continued, got into the first vet check. He stretched out and peed, and it was really brown and ugly.
Right.
And I made no bones about it. I went to the vets and said...
Was he showing any lameness at that time?
Pardon?
Was he showing any lameness at that time at all?
No.
Okay. All right.
And the vets had seen him flip, because he flipped just before the trot by halfway through the loop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like... They were witnesses. Anyhow, so... as the day progressed, his urine improved. He basically peed at every vet check, and like
right. You
could see it. It wasn't 100% better. The first vet check was ugly. The second vet check was a bit better, and it was like it kept. this is what's happening.
That's a very good point, and I think some of these horses may be instances where they have point source trauma or some muscle damage that's small enough that it doesn't become a locomotion issue, doesn't make the horse lame, doesn't make the horse get cold, and the body essentially flushes some of that out, because there has to be some source of that myoglobin release, and it's got to be some type of muscle damage. But it may be minimal enough that the body continues to function, and you never see. And if you hadn't had that issue, like a bad step or a flip or something or a kick, you wouldn't necessarily know it.
Yeah.
The other interesting one is that there's a slide there of three horses on the first loop at the national championships, and it's all pretty much what would be considered in the range of normal urine, but it was amazing to me to look at those three horses all at the same point in the ride. You can see two of them are way more dilute, one of them is way more concentrated, and this goes back to the dehydration idea. Now, it would be interesting to correlate that with weight loss at the various checkpoints and see whether or not that one horse that was concentrated wasn't drinking as well, or had lost more body water weight. But you can see lots and lots of variation on the turbidity, on the cloudiness or the concentration. And with these strips, you can actually measure specific gravity to let you know whether it's more or more concentrated. But everything we measured, unless the horse had a kidney function problem, which we never saw, was in the normal limits. So apparently the horse can tolerate all kinds of variations of hydration scores, and the specific gravity is still going to be in the normal limits as long as the kidneys are working correctly, which means that we may not be able to get any predictive value out of that, because it's too far out of normal range by the time you get something to predict. What we did find is that, interestingly enough, ketones were very predictive of horses that were having problems. All of our urine from horses that ended up getting pulled had abnormal ketone values. Now, I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg. Can you look at climbing ketones and say, okay, that horse is going to have a problem, or do the problems then flush out other things into the urine so that it's only you're seeing the marker, but it has nothing to do with being able to be predictive? And we want to do some more of that.
Let me back up five paces, because
sure,
my chemistry is, let's just say, so rusty it creaks. you talk about ketones, and yeah, I know it's one of those carbon types of things. And
right.
At the same time, what's it good for and what's it bad for?
Okay.
Where does it come from?
It comes from carbohydrate metabolism. You're absolutely right. And it's a process of the glucose synthesis and the whole Krebs cycle. And it kicks out, it's essentially a waste product that gets kicked out of energy metabolism. The body maintains a normal amount of that. You should not find ketones in the urine. Most urine is it doesn't have ketones. If you're starting to have problems with your energy metabolism, certainly anaerobic, the longer you work anaerobically, the more ketones. And if you're just not able to, with glucose or insulin, keep a maintenance balance, you will end up with more ketones. The interesting thing about that is that there was a study done in Australia on endurance horses, and they looked at, everybody's looking for predictive value. That's one of the things in our sport. If we can find things that we can look at going into a ride or during a ride and get horses out of that ride before they get into trouble, everybody's really pro that. So a lot of studies get funded to look at that. They, at this one particular ride, they did blood work at a specific point in the ride and then looked at who finished and who didn't, and then tried to correlate whether there was anything abnormal in the blood. On a high percentage, it was over 80% of the non-finishers, they found lipid peroxidases, which are another enzyme involved in the fat cycle at this point, but a spin-off of the whole metabolic cycle. And they also found ketones were elevated in horses that didn't finish. So is it that these horses get into some type of an abnormal energy cycle? They're not functioning correctly. They start breaking down things that they shouldn't because their energy demands are higher or they're not efficient, that spill some of this stuff off into the urine. And I wish I could be more specific and give you this does this does this. We simply don't know. They're not supposed to be there. We know where they get produced, how they get into the bladder, and what it means about what's going wrong with the production process or the clearance process. We don't know yet. So it's kind of we're going backwards. We're trying to look at what's there, figure out what's abnormally there, and then where may it come from. And then the last part of it is trying to figure out why. So it's sort of a roundabout way going about this, but there's no one blazing this trail because nothing else has been done. Like I said, when I've looked at the urine markers and urine color, other than the two studies that Dr. Schott did using treadmill stuff, nobody's looked at you know, doing some controlled studies with exercise and looking at the amount of blood. Even in something simple as blood, nobody looked at that, let alone ketones or any of the other parameters that we started looking at.
Ken?
Yes.
What the darker color, is that caused by the ketones or the bilirubin or
the
both?
The darker brown color?
Well, the darker color in the urine.
Well, again, when you start talking colors, you can have a dark green, you can have a dark brown, you can have a dark red. So
the
reddish brown tinge, and most people call it brown to black, I guess, is myoglobin, and that is muscle breakdown.
Okay.
So the strict red color, and it can be a really dark red even sometimes, that's going to be blood, but it is much more, when you look at it, it is visibly more toward the red range than toward the brown-black range. But the dark black, that is typically myoglobin. And I submit to you, like that one set of slides I put in there, these horses have a mixture of both, so the color is probably you want to make a really dark red. You know, you add a little brown to it, and stuff, you make a dark red. So I think the two colors together, horses that have that really black urine probably have both myoglobin and some hemoglobin content to it.
Okay.
Yeah, and your three slides from the national championships, so the horses at 37 miles, two of which finished, and
right,
one of which was pulled for low gut sounds. The one in the middle is decidedly redder looking, but then it doesn't have the darker brown in it to hide the red, as it were.
Right, right.
If you look at the foam in the first one, it's so dark brown, it's got a little red to it, at least in your slide it does.
Well, and that's the other problem, too, because in the first couple of loops, you get really great slides because you got good light. On about 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, you're using artificial light, and the colors change.
So that can affect.
Yeah. And I've tried saving some of this urine, much to my wife's chagrin, and bringing it home and then taking all this stuff to something like Home Depot that's got a photometric deal. It doesn't save well. The colors change.
So
yeah, being able to go ahead and say, you know, this has got three parts cadmium yellow and two parts vermilion, and, you know, that would be perfect because then you'd have a very – and the technology is there. You'd have a very accurate idea of what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been able to do that yet. You have to do it kind of on-site or at least in a short period of time before that. I think photography is a good way to go, but we've got to standardize lighting and everything else, and that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you look, too, there was one slide of a horse from Big South Fork, and that was a much heavier muscled horse. And in the tie-up, that horse ended up with a darker brown-black color.
Yeah, it is very dark. Breaker. Yeah, here he is.
Yeah, the breaker, exactly. My question is, does the amount of muscle mass in that horse determine the amount of myoglobin released, regardless of how severe the tie-up is, and does that change the color? I don't, just like we can't tell severity of a tie-up based on the lab values, the LDH and the CK, there's no way to say, okay, this value is 2,000 higher than this horse, this was a more severe tie-up than this. It just doesn't work that way. There's no correlation between lab values. I don't think there's a correlation between color either, and there's too much variant to that. The amount of muscle, I think, does determine how much myoglobin gets reduced. And it makes intuitive sense. If you have more muscle and you have, say, a mild tie-up, you will have more myoglobin just because you've got more muscle mass, regardless of how much
to produce
damage.
Yeah.
Right. So a thin horse that ties up severely and a heavy horse that ties up mildly, might have the exact same looking urine. And
yeah, and in some of these, you've got, you know, you start it with what looks like very dark brown.
Right.
And then, you know, 15 minutes of fluids, and it's quite yellow with almost no red in it.
Yeah.
And others, the same thing, you start out with a dark brown, but then it goes to much more of a light red color.
And that would be the variation between the myoglobin and the hemoglobin. And if that horse had been, if that horse hadn't tied up, and you really looked at the urine, and how many times when your horse is urinating at the ground, you're not going to be able to see these subtleties in color. You have to catch
no.
it in a cup. So do these horses, a lot of these horses, have a little light tinge of red? Because we know from the other studies that both Dr. Schott did and our human studies that, you know, 90% of these horses exercising for a long enough period of time do have some degree of bleeding.
The bladder trauma
Right, more than
but
that.
But you can't, in the dark brown, you can't really tell whether there's how much blood there is in it without without analyzing it to see.
Right.
It could be just myoglobin or it could be,
And the problem with the test strips is that they are very vague on blood. They give you a plus, a 2+, a 3+, and a 4+. And I still have yet to see in some of these horses that I know have blood because it's red tinged. You're not getting much on those test strips. They're not sensitive enough for blood.
Okay, is that the one with the little strips at the bottom that starts out kind of aqua on one side and ends up white on the other?
Right, and if you look, there's little squares all the way along it. There's some seven or eight squares on that strip. Each of those squares is a different test. You get pH, nitrate, ketones, bilirubin. You get specific gravity. There's a number of different things, and globulins. You can get a ton of stuff off of that one strip. So that strip, dip it in. 30 to 45 seconds later, you read all that, and it gives you a comparison chart so you can compare colors. And that makes it really easy to do, and that's why I thought if we could pick up something that you might see as more of a strict correlative kind of test, that's the way we'd want to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we had the following incident occur down at the ride we just went to, Gallop on the Greenway. In fact, I need to talk to Mike about that because he really got Dom angry. Super was just light, you know, A minus. You know, Tom Timmons, who has a very good eye.
Right.
The second check. On the third check, he started hesitating a little on that loop. On the next loop, he started.
Super started.
Super. This is Super we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The first indication was on both the first checkpoints, he took about 5 to 7 minutes to recover, which is very unusual for him. He was recovering more slowly than Winston, our young horse, who has never had that good recovery. And on the next leg, so we're going from about 40 miles out to 51 miles in the ride, he stopped, would stop and then he'd pick back up to keep up with Winston, and finally he just started stopping and let Winston go on, and he came into the checkpoint, a few minutes after Winston, the other rider who was riding with him. And Dom said, Dom was feeling something in the left hind. She said, he's lifting me slightly higher on the left. She's a very sensitive seat. Raining like crazy. We tried him out for the best. They gave him all A's. But Dom said, I just don't think I should take this horse back out. He's trotting. He's stopping on trail. The next leg is... Now, Mike checked him and was sort of telling Dom she definitely should go back out, yada, yada, yada. But Dom and I had a long talk and agreed we'd go ahead and ride her option. Shortly after that, he peed, and it was... let me see.
This is without, the lighting being proper because it's pouring rain.
Yeah, it's pouring rain. It's daylight. We're not at dark. And just trying to find one that was...
You might start with slide 7 just because.
Which one's slide 7?
Well, they're numbered. National Championship tied up horse loop 3, 52 miles.
Yeah, sort of maybe the middle color there on slide 7.
Okay. All right.
Between the middle and the one on the right. It wasn't anywhere close to the one on the left.
Okay.
So we took him back to camp. We tried him out for Ann. She saw, again, it was very slight but consistent on the left, not in the foot strikes. Foot strikes were symmetric, but in the way he was carrying the leg in the air. and we ran blood work, and the blood work came back with a CPK of like 40,000 and a GOT like 1,200, I think.
Sounds okay.
And so we went ahead and put, you know, 25 liters of fluid in him and Vincent
right.
peed, and the pee looked good with reddish right at the end.
Okay.
When we got back home, Ann came out and examined him more closely, Ann Stewart, who was the foreign veterinary delegate down there, and basically had back spasms. And what we realized is it's probably Dom's saddle. The Dom had used this saddle when Super was second in North Americans, but Super has changed shape a lot in the
sure.
last 4 years because he's gone from, you know, being a 13-year-old horse to almost an 18-year-old horse. And Dom's saddle, you know, we're kicking ourselves that we didn't check it properly. So you had two things that would contribute to major problems. One was the saddle not fitting right, and the second was Dom weighed in for some reason with that saddle about 191, which is
more than he's accustomed to.
Yeah, more, he normally we weigh in between 175 and 180, and that was pre-ride, and then it rained like hell. And our experience is you get those hard rains, the saddle and the saddle pad, and in her case she was riding with a seat saver, add another 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Plus your clothing and wet and everything else.
Yeah, so
yeah, not to discount the terrain too, because I've certainly seen more of this in horses that are moving a lot more and slipping a little bit, and they overwork the, you know, the gluteals and the inside muscles of the up high and the hind leg trying to balance and stuff, and you can get more trauma that way and a little bit more muscle damage too.
Yeah.
So it does seem to say that if you guys are seeing horses that have, for whatever reason, some low level muscle damage that makes either mild to non-visible lameness changes, that you might easily have that correlated with some urine changes.
Yeah, now, is there anything that, you know, would the, if we'd had one of those sticks there, what would have shown up if we'd been able to catch the urine when he peed?
You probably wouldn't have got enough blood, because we're still, like I said, it's not specific enough for blood. You would probably have seen some elevated ketones that is the most we can get. Now, Dr. Schott's been talking about some more specific urine markers that you can look at for muscle damage, but they have to be done in a laboratory setting because they have to be reacted with other agents and cooked in the whole 10 yards. But we're trying to set up getting some of the samples from this next year and getting them looked at to see if we can find some of these more elusive muscle enzymes in the urine. And from a practical standpoint, and then again, I want to kind of make sure that you guys get what I think are the only things we can really take from this that are practical. You know yourself, that horse there is a great example. You've got a horse that was showing mild lameness or just some very difficult stuff to see and some urine discoloration. It means to me, I guess, when I see that, my index of suspicion has got to be elevated. Yes, there are horses like the ones in the slide set that don't have any problems and finish fine, and there are probably also some horses that are just on the borderline, and making sure that we decide which ones we should let go on and which ones we should keep is the difficult part of this. If I see anything that bothers me out of the ordinary, and I certainly, if I'm at the vet check and the rider tells me, hey, you know, Doc, when I was out on this loop, he's doing great, he seems to be fine, everything seems to be okay, but when I was out on this loop, he urinated and it was pretty brown or dark or whatever, I'm going to go through that horse on the vet check, perhaps even closer than I might with another horse, and I'm sure as heck going to go ahead and do an exit exam on that horse as well, too, with CRIs both times. If anything is out of the ordinary, then that means, okay, there's that urine is telling us something, and that horse has got a problem. Did the horses at the national championship that had the urine discolored but completed, did they have something going on? I still can't say that they didn't. It never became enough to cause a problem that day, or in follow-up with them with phone conversations later on, nothing was ever noted. But does that necessarily mean it's not there? You know, who knows? I mean, I think horses compete with problems all the time and, you know, either tough it out or it just never becomes enough of an issue on that particular day.
Would you say that it may be a good percentage of the cases, either the rider, the vet, or the horse shows, some other signs besides the dark urine?
The vast majority of them
state that he needed to stop.
Yep. The vast majority do. And again, I mean, if you apply a much tighter criteria to those horses, and do, you know, and make sure that
They get CRIs, both of the initial exam and the exit exam. Again, as well as my soapbox, I'm still amazed that they're, you know, that's out there.
Hey, Ken?
Ken, we're losing you.
Wait on just a moment because we're losing you a bit. I don't know whether it's head coverage or the headset.
I'm pulled off the headset. Is that any better?
No.
Not really.
Okay, let me turn the headset
that's
off.
That's good.
That is. That's good.
That's better? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. I don't know what it is, but I'm not going to move. I'm actually pulled off the stop, so I wanted to make sure it was quiet. That's still good?
It was better before.
Okay. Let me...
That's good.
Go ahead. All right. Well, I can take the headset off. Let me just turn that off and see if that makes a difference. Bear with me a second here. I'll turn the headset off. See, you guys tell me if it's any better. How's that? Can you still hear me?
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
Okay.
That's
all right,
good.
Well, good. All right. Well, maybe the headset's failing a little bit. It's been a long day. I was saying I'm surprised at some rides that you can still occasionally catch people not doing CRIs. And as a rider, I would push to make everybody do a CRI. You know, it's an additional piece of information that goes into your mindset in terms of what you do with that horse. It's so easy to do. But what I would say, I guess, is that when I see that dark urine, you just go into a different mode in terms of evaluating that horse.
Mm-hmm.
Look at everything a little closer and do an exit exam and see how that horse is. And if everything's okay, go on. But if you get 2 miles into the next loop and you're feeling something, anything like that, that would be the tipping point and say, okay, you know, this is just not it, and the horse is actually telling me something. I have had situations where we've done that. People have got on the trail, and the horse has gotten progressively better and just felt great and just drank and urine cleared and stuff. And that's the way, I guess, you would play a situation like that and just, you know, see how the horse does. And the urine is one more thing. I'm not a rider, and I'm always amazed and educated by riders that will tell me that, you know, the comment is something like, well, he was talking to me with his pace, or he was telling me he wanted to do this or do that. Well, the urine's talking to you, too. It's just a different way of doing that. That's one more thing that you read about what your horse is telling you and put it into your decision-making process in the same way. And I don't know that you don't need to carry anything else with you on the trail, but, you know, I haven't been too worried about it in terms of putting a hand under there and catching some urine every once in a while, too. At least you can look at that when you're on the trail and have a little better idea. Because if you expect to evaluate it while, you know, there's a stream coming out, you're not going to get much. And again, you may not be on the ground when it happens, but if you do get a chance to catch it, it's probably one more thing, and you wipe the hand off and go on for the most part. But if you do pick up something, it's, you know, another good parameter to be able to check.
Mm-hmm. Turn around and go back.
We have Stag's, you know, PPPD, but the P part we might, you know, split into
add one
there, and then what does it look like exactly?
Yeah, put a U in there somewhere, huh?
Yeah. There's a couple of interesting slides in there, too. Did everybody see the bright orange one?
Yeah, at the very end? No.
Yeah, what do you think that bright orange one is?
The kind of yellow. Yellow
They're
kind of orange-yellow thick.
Yeah. I don't have an answer for that one either. There's the ones with the sludge in there. How much stuff is sitting in that bladder? I'd like a pre-ride one that could have been sitting in there the whole time, and then it got more dehydrated, so it got thicker. We don't know that much about what that stuff means. The stuff that's white in people, usually white urine is usually associated with high amount of cells, leukocytes, or white blood cells, and that usually goes along with a pretty good infection of some type or another, even to the point of various types of bladder cancer. And yet we see white urine in horses that have no problems, and the ones that I followed up on have not run into problems. So I don't know what white urine pretty much means. The ones that we've looked at don't have any increased cellularity and certainly no elevated white count in the horse itself.
Yeah, you had one at Yellowhammer that was real creamy looking. I mean,
yep.
It definitely, you know, very opaque, as it were.
Yeah.
Not clear, which is usually a sign of bacterial infection or something
sure.
like that, at least in a human
Absolutely.
Being would be.
It would be in a person, exactly, all the white colors that are listed. And, you know, if anybody's interested, I'll give you the reference for that paper. And you can go on this paper, and with the 72 different colors, you can – and they break it down to light yellow, amber yellow, dark yellow, yellow-green, green, and you can go look at all the different things. And drugs are a huge part of it. Various plants, everything from blueberries to kale to various types of other
– anything they could have eaten, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We'll make color changes as well. And then lots of the medications that are out there will do that. Most of the routine horse medications, because the companies know this and don't want to necessarily put telltale signs on what the horses are getting, most of this stuff is dye-free and it has been designed so it doesn't change urine color, but certainly some drugs can. And in humans, anyway, that's not a problem. Most of the people taking medications aren't competing, and so they don't really care what the color of the urine is. So a lot of the drugs, a lot of the anti-cancer medications, a lot of steroids, a lot of other things in people will cause fairly unique changes in color. I did have a rider bring me a sample in a Beasley bucket and said, "Doc, I heard you're doing this urine color thing. Here's some interesting urine for you." And it was bright, almost fluorescent orange. And I looked at that and I said, "Oh man, I got to see this horse." And she later admitted to me later that it was her own urine, and she takes a drug that makes her not have to urinate as much when she goes to ride, so she doesn't have to stop on trail. And that's what it does to her urine color.
Yeah, I know there are such things. Yeah.
Yeah,
gee whiz.
So, very interesting.
Interesting.
Did you say gee whiz? no pun there.
No whiz.
But yeah, it's been very interesting trying to correlate this stuff. But I think we have a lot of things that we can do down the road, and I need the riders in all of this. The spreading the news would be great because the interesting horses, like I said, are the ones that seem to be doing well but have abnormal urine color. And mm-hmm. and then the ones that have problems, it's really nice to know if we can get some preliminary data in terms of when this stuff happens. Because, when the horse urinates and he's got a problem, everybody's looking for that. When he's on the trail two loops beforehand, is it getting that way, but nobody's noticing or looking because he doesn't have a problem yet? Those are the kind of things we're looking for. And if we can take some of those samples and then run them through Dr. Schott's lab and look at some of these more specific urine markers that may give us a better idea as to what we can do, then the project comes full circle so that then we can go ahead and tell you, like you were asking Steg too, all right, you have a horse in trouble. Here's what you can do in terms of looking at these particular things, and it might be able to do some sort of simple test. But then you can say, okay, yeah, this horse you really need to stop because he's not in trouble yet, but he will be with any kind of a reasonable assurance, and that's what we're looking for.
Sure. We all love to know, to be able to do that.
Right. Stop. And I don't know whether this might be a training issue as well, too. If you start out with a horse that's a relatively inexperienced horse with not a lot of training yet and you notice certain things, can you monitor those to give you an idea of metabolic fitness, if you will, in terms of how that horse processes muscle damage and processes, stress on the bladder and stuff? Because I would assume that bladder and muscle and everything else, they condition like any other organ, and over time a horse will become either less sensitive to it or the sensitivity will take the horse out of the sport. So we might be able to use some of these things as monitors for success in training as well, too.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, there's a part of me that says, I have just, I guess, a certain amount of experience with one of our horses who, at least at home, urinates frequently.
Right.
And when we got him, he urinated an awful lot. And he, over the training regimen and as he does rides, he seems to urinate a bit less. And I don't know if bladders can, this gets, the basic bladder conditioning or something like that, it can cope better with the riding.
Well, it would be kidneys probably, because they're producing it. The bladder basically is a collection elimination organ. So, and I do think kidneys can go ahead and change their functionality as the horse learns to, as the body learns to concentrate more. I mean, there's no reason for the average horse to worry about concentrating. You get thirsty, you go get some more water. But if you're in situations where you don't always have access to water, can the body get better at saving water? And certainly in people that are in long-term situations where they have to ration water, they do become better at that. You reduce fecal output, you reduce urine output. So that perhaps is a response. It's not been studied much in people because you go and you grab yourself another bottle of water. You stop at the next water break on the endurance ride or the marathon trail and drink more. But, in our situation, that's not always possible because we drink where there is water available. There isn't always water available. Do horses learn to conserve a little bit more? And again, it has to happen on a physiologic basis. There's no, there's no willful control over that. But it is possible that horses and bodies adapt that way. We know it happens with energy sources. The horses can learn how to utilize fat. If you don't give them as much carbohydrate, give them more fat, the systems in the body that utilize fat will get stronger and more well-developed. Consequently, if you're not getting as much water and you're being required to exercise, There is something to be said that the body can, kidneys can learn to concentrate better. So that's a possibility.
Well, it's interesting. Ken, I read a book recently. I don't know whether I mentioned this one to you or not. You might enjoy reading it. Cheryl's rolling her eyes because I keep... but it's called Horses of the Sahara.
You did. You talked to me a little bit about that, yeah.
Anyway, it's amazing how, and you know, how they ration the water and only, you know, let the horses water, like, I think it, part of the season once a day and the other part of the season twice a day.
Right.
You look at that and would think, you know, our endurance horses would die on that type of watering regimen.
Right.
But, you know, so how much of that is they train their horses?
Sure.
And also, obviously, there was a selection for horses that could survive in the desert well. And
yep.
The cavalry horses.
And I would think that under those conditions, the normal response of the body would be to be as conservative as possible with the water source that it's getting. So that's mm-hmm. a possibility. Well, I do think that is
one other,
more. Go ahead.
There's one other sort of note that I'm wrestling with on this. You're looking at urine produced by horses in endurance racing, and at the same time, I'm going back to my horse, who was in the Gophi 100, didn't bother to pee until like 85 miles into the ride.
Right.
And which was, you know, really, in my books, chew my fingernails. At the same
yep.
time, when he finally did pee, everything was fine.
Yeah.
It was like there was no particular, I mean, he was a bit more concentrated than you'd necessarily want to have, but...
Right.
Had he been drinking all along?
He'd been drinking all along. He'd
yeah.
using it.
Well, yeah. He,
holding on to it.
If he held on to it for that long, you would think that there'd be a fairly dilute amount of urine in there because his bladder should have been pretty full. But that kind of variation drives me nuts because you're absolutely right. Trying to find a pattern through all this. Remember that everything is a bell curve. Every physiologic, biologic functions on the bell curve. You're going to have horses on both ends of that. So there's a horse out there that pees 300 times in a 50-mile ride, and he's normal. And there's a horse that pees, you know, once in a 50-mile ride, if that much, and he's normal. It's just a question of where the majority fit, and you have mm-hmm. to throw those outliers out. So that is frustrating. How does that horse tolerate, you know, the bladder stretch and not have more problems? Although there is a lot to be said in human runners. If you call your physician, the sports medicine physician, and say, hey, I'm a marathoner or whatever, and I have a problem that I'm having a lot more blood in my urine when I run, the first thing they say is drink more. They tell these people to have a full bladder because a full bladder essentially negates a lot of the slapping effect of the bladder and the walls of the bladder against each other when you run. If you have a water buffer in there, it doesn't do as much trauma. So a horse with a full bladder would have less of a chance of having bladder trauma. And apparently, I guess you could get a physicist to tell you that if you have this much fill and the shape of the bladder is like this or like this based on the anatomy, that you get more sway when the horse moves and stuff. But a fuller bladder is a good thing from that standpoint. So maybe you didn't get anything discolored because you had a nice full bladder for that long
yeah.
ride. But why one would have it and one wouldn't, I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Erg.
You know, when I was going over these slides beforehand, Ken, I wound up with more questions than I had answers.
Oh, believe me. We've done that, too. Yeah, I've presented this to a number of veterinarians and both you know, renal physiologist, sports medicine physiologist, and some anatomist to talk about, you know, this bladder design and stuff. And we generate, each time I talk to people, we generate a bunch of other questions, and everybody mm-hmm. says, oh, it would be cool to look at this and cool to look at that. So there's a lot more designs out there. And, again, this is an area that we're just scratching the surface because nobody's really done much with it. Yeah, and it begs a little bit more. And, again, the total money output for the 2 year study that I've done is probably less than $100. And that's all for the little strips. I mean, Michael donated the wood to make the buckets. Everybody collects. And I was going to rides when I first started this and said, hey, you know, if you find some really interesting urine, can you take some, get a sample in one of these cups? We showed them how to use the buckets. And most of the rides that Michael and I go to, we make up, you know, 10 of these things, and we hang them on the tape around the vet check area so somebody can come pick one up or they can use it when it's there. And they just leave them there when they're done. We take them home and use them at the next ride. And like I said, all the stuff to make them, once you get the little stick, everything else is free. We use bottles at the ride. But I told people, collect the urine, put your horse's number on it, the time that you collected it, where you were on the ride when you collected it. And, you know, if I'm not available or if I'm vetting horses, just leave them on my truck. And I'll go back to my truck, and there's like 30 or 40 samples there. And, you know, I'm like, the cell phone recording stuff in between horses coming in. So getting these things is no problem. We're amassing a ton of information, trying to sort through it. Now what we've done is basically said, okay, these are, you know, I don't think I need any more pictures of regular dilute yellow urine. These are the horses we want to look at now, specifically the ones that are in trouble and that have bad-looking urine, the ones that are bad-looking urine but aren't in trouble, and the ones that are the weird ones, so that we can kind of learn more about those particular ones. And that's kind of where we are.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you wanted a bunch of answers, not going to get it. We know a lot less, and we thought we knew more. Now we've gotten a lot of information to realize what we don't really know. But it has asked a bunch of good questions, and I think that we're on to something here, and I think we might be able to identify a couple of things that might help us pick out some of the horses and say, okay, he's in trouble, he's not in trouble, or be able to look at how much trouble these horses are in, and that might help us with treatment a little bit too. But like I said, I'm way more interested in, we know pretty much how to treat horses, and if we're aggressive with fluids, everybody does usually okay. I'm way more interested in what happens to these guys before they get in trouble and how we can keep some of these guys from getting in trouble, and what does it mean adaptively, physiologically, how can we figure out how to get horses to be more like the ones that don't get affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're out there at rides, if you find some of these things, even if they're, you know, it's a ride nobody else is around, there's no way to take samples, collect it and take it just a good picture, a good digital picture, and then record as much information as you can remember about where you were, what was going on, stuff leading up to it, and then maybe how long it took for the urine to clear and what the next urine looks like, and if you can get it. Those would be valuable, and those things you can just send to me if anybody's got them, and we'll correlate that and see.
Interesting. I'm staring at slide 5, which is the Yellowhammer ICRI Polder 24. And the intriguing thing to me, one of the intriguing things about this is these little strips that you've got.
Right.
And as you say, they show a lot of different things. And at the same time, they don't necessarily show the blood level particularly well correlated or anything else.
Right.
Is there any movement of foot to get to that other layer of analysis with something that's like a cheap strip?
Well, the way that you would normally do this, if you're in a hospital, they'd take that urine sample, they'd spin it, they decant the stuff off of it, take a look at the stuff that's in the supernate, and go ahead and make a slide of that and look for red blood cells, because you can see them on a slide when you can't even see the color.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you know, five cells in a certain volume is not going to give you enough red tints to see the color, but you can see them that way. There are a number of stains that you can put in that stuff that only stain blood, so that there are lots of other things you can do. Unfortunately, the cost, my $100 cost, goes through the roof once you get past the simple stuff.
Right.
And we probably could come up with another test if we know how specific it has to be. So that's why collecting some of these things and trying to figure out how much blood, how much, you know, myoglobin is actually in them. And again, I'm not that interested in the blood from the standpoint that if I find it, I'm not too surprised. And I don't think a horse is going to ever bleed enough to cause a problem. If you tell me the horse has got blood in his urine and we know it's just blood, I'm going to say, great, you know, feed him his normal diet and he'll replace all that. Even with people, it is rarely a problem, other than the fact that when you're peeing in a porcelain toilet and you see some blood in your urine, that usually tends to get your attention. You know, anything out of the ordinary tends to get your attention, but in a physiologic sense, a little blood in your urine from trauma is not a problem whatsoever. Anyway, hockey players, if you look at hematuria in human athletes, there are studies done on tug of war players. I mean, I didn't realize that they had like a tug of war league, but there's a tug of war league, and they've done studies on how much bleeding in tug of war. You can find it in soccer, hockey, football, boxing. Any sport you want, and even some weird sports, you can find how much urine, blood in the urine shows up. It is a very, very rare instance that causes any kind of a clinical problem. It's interesting because it's not supposed to be there, and you tend to notice it. Interestingly enough, more males report color in the urine than women do because of the way men and women urinate. you tend to see it more when you're standing there looking down at the bowl. So that is an interesting recording deal. So it's probably out there. It's overreported in males, underreported in women, and probably doesn't mean as much as anybody gets worried about it, at least in people. I'm way more interested in horses and the myoglobin because that correlates to a disease that could potentially kill them and a disease we usually end up having to treat, if that makes sense. I mean, I think horses are going to bleed if they go far enough. The bleeding usually doesn't cause a problem. It's visual, but it doesn't usually cause a problem. I don't know that we'll ever reduce that because of the nature of the bladder and the way it's designed. Same thing with people, if you go far enough. But myoglobin, we need to get a handle on that because that is going to be something that if you don't find those individuals, that will lead to a catastrophic problem.
Right. Is there something magical about cloudiness that it doesn't sound like there is?
No, there may be. I don't know yet. It is usually an indication of either protein, which can make the urine thicker, and I guess that the horses that are getting higher protein diets are going to get rid of more of it, so they may not need that much. Does it make the kidneys work a little harder? Sure. So a kidney that's working harder that gets a small myoglobin load, would it have more difficulty clearing the myoglobin than a kidney that didn't have as much protein that it also had to clear? Probably. So from those standpoints, you can say that, all right, we need to reduce some of the cloudiness. So, and most of the time, cloudiness is going to be either protein, white cells, some evidence of some sort of infection, or just simply concentration and mucus and so forth. And in the latter case, I don't know that anybody knows if that means anything. There's lots of small particulate things that get into urine depending on diet, and that's a whole area we haven't even looked at. How does diet affect urine? And I guess that's something that would have to be done on a retrospective study and looking at some of this urine and trying to figure out what diets these horses were on and what that did to the urine. The sources of calcium, sources of other minerals and so forth that the bladder has to work really hard at clearing, sources of protein. Does the protein coming from peanut hulls lead to a different type of material in the urine than the protein coming from soybean? And nobody's even gotten close to looking at that. When I see cloudy urine, I want to make sure that horse is hydrated. If it's hydrated with cloudy urine, then to me it's a variant, and I got to let it go because right now we don't know any more about that. If it's cloudy urine and my horse is dehydrated, then I'm worried because the horse is probably more dehydrated than I'm even seeing on the skin.
Oh, that's interesting. Rick, did you have any questions? You've been quiet. Is he still there? Guess not.
Yeah.
Anybody else with questions or comments?
And certainly if you think of other things as you mull this over, I mean, write them down and catch me in a ride because, like I said, it is good food for lots of other questions. And I do think your observations, you being the collective group on the phone here and lots of other riders, so if you're having a chat at a ride somewhere, you're riding along and you want to bring up the topic, get other people to think about it because I think getting more of these instances, and I've actually learned something from listening to you folks tonight about the horses that have had these, the one that flipped over and, you know, the other horse you were talking about having isolated incidents that then went back and looked like low-level muscle damage. And that's something that I think we need to all look for. I've been interested in trying to look at these horses and perhaps having time to run the thermography over them during the vet check to see whether the thermography picks up an area of muscle damage based on vascular flow that we might not even be aware of, you know, that you can't see, you can't pick up. But, you know, the urine's telling us something. The big question is, what is it?
What?
Thank you for giving me a tremendous amount to think about. As you said, more questions than answers.
Good food for thought.
Ask the questions
right
before we ever get
to the answers. Yeah. Well, and again, there's some benefit to that, too. It'd be nice to come out here and you know, give you an educational talk and say, all right, this is this, and this is the answer. This is we're not at that stage yet.
Oh, maybe
it'll
someday.
Be part of the process. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is a classic case of we don't know enough.
True. And
on a lot of cases, yeah. On a lot of,
yeah.
A lot of
time, there's a lot to be looking for and at.
Right.
All of us.
But it's something that we're
it
not
certainly
even
looks like looking. It offers some help for the future, though. I mean, that
sure.
There is a future in looking at these things.
Yep. Well, the thing to take away from this,
too.
is that there are things that we can look at. Most people look at the horse peeing and don't do anything about it, don't even, you know, see beyond that. And it is a wealth of information that basically we're just, to quote a phrase, we're just pissing away. You know, there's a lot of information that we can do more with. So
you can hold on to.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the puns are endless. So, but when your horse is out there, you know, basically take a closer look and look for this stuff and let me know and record it. You may, something may click in your mind too as you're going down trail, or what you see on your own horses too.
Yeah, and this has been very, in its own peculiar way, enlightening, and also basically
confusing.
Argues with me that I want to put more discipline about my looking at, oh, the horse is peeing at last, thank you.
Right, yeah, yeah, but you can get more information than just that, so, and that's exactly what we need to do. And if we do more of this, it may just be, now, this has been one little study, one person looking at urine, and you know, we've probably looked at 300-400 urine samples, but if that is increased by a larger number, we might be able to find a little bit more of a trend or a pattern, too.
Some correlation, too.
The other thing,
sure,
that
absolutely
would be sort of curious is controlling within the same equine. Admittedly,
sure,
each ride is its own thing with a given horse, but at the same time, frequently the management and the eating parts are,
yep,
similar.
But I'd like to know more about cycling mare urine as well, too. Where in cycles does that have effects and stuff? So, and that's got to be a part of it as well. And I would say out of that 300 or 400 urine samples, we've probably had, you know, maybe 25 abnormals. So we're not looking at a lot of abnormal stuff, you know, true abnormals, a lot of the cloudy stuff and white color and stuff. You can lump that in. If we lump those, we probably still only have, you know, 50 or 60 abnormal urines to look at. A lot of it is just normal looking urine. So you have to throw a really large net to get some of the abnormals in this, and those are the only ones we're really going to learn stuff from.
Oh, wow. There are times when being at the early stage of research can be very, very fascinating and frustrating.
Absolutely, absolutely. But at this point, I treat these horses at rides a little differently now, and at least that's made that much of a difference. And I think other vets are starting to do that too. They look a little closer, and it isn't the fact that, all right, that horse is peeing, you know, dark red or dark brown, he's out. You know, get him to the treatment right away. We're not quite that knee jerk about it right now. So that's been a benefit that immediately has come across, just by being able to get these slides of the finishers that have that bad urine out there. It's getting people to at least think the concept,
yeah.
And that's a big paradigm shift to start off with.
Yeah, I believe you entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if people have other questions, write them down and, you know, get in touch with me and stuff. And hopefully maybe we can do this again in another year after this ride season and have a little bit more information in terms of where we can go from there.
Right.
That'd be great.
Sounds great.
Yeah, cool.
That's a great idea. Thank you very, very much.
We really appreciate your taking the time.
No problem.
Thank
you for keeping me company on the drive home.
Yeah, I can go home and get some rest.
All right. Good night to everybody.
See you
later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ken.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.